Good morning, everyone. So welcome to the session. It's developing and managing BI semantic tabular model in SQL Server 2012 and SP1 and a future CUs. So it's going to be incorporated into what was released in SQL Server 2012, along with how it's been expanded with the SP1, Service Pack 1, and a few CUs after coming back. And so I also have a copy of my latest book of SQL Server 2012. Feel free to ask questions. I'll decide on what is the best question and then hand the book out to the appropriate folks. Okay. Feel free to ask questions if you have anything in between. Okay. So for the agenda, so I'll give a quick introduction in terms of how the BI semantic model came about and what are the reasons behind it, how did we approach it, and this is also integrated into Excel 2013. We'll talk a little bit more about it and how we see the overall transition from personal BI into corporate BI. And as part of it, you'll learn a little bit more about the semantic model, managing it, and then in terms of creation, how do you import from Power Pivot and expand it in terms of corporate BI tabular model. And one of the new things which was released recently was Parallel Data Warehouse 2012. And I have a demo set up, which I need to connect to Redmond back with Corporate Access. Hopefully that demo will also work. And you'll see how PDW 2012, you can set up Polybase with Hadoop. And if you set up a direct query against using BI semantic model tabular, you can connect via Power View. So that's another thing which people have been asking for. And then a final summary. And you'll have a lot of demos, so feel free to ask questions in between towards it. Okay. And how many of you have used analysis services? Multidimensional, primarily. Okay. About 50%. Tabular. Okay. And Power Pivot, how many of you have used Power Pivot? Probably about 40-50% of the people. Okay. So analysis services, these are quotes from latest BI Magic Quadrant. So analysis services chosen primarily, one of the key things is low cost of ownership and still OLAP, primarily the multidimensional model. It's still being used by a lot of the customers and they leverage it. And one of the key things is the overall integration with respect to coming from Excel and transitioning into corporate model. That overall gives the breadth in terms of end-to-end story from Microsoft BI overall. And these are the various quotes in terms of how the customers using the product have rated it as compared to all the other products in the market, competing products in the market. Okay. So analysis services, the product started about 15 years ago. We released the first version. It's more in terms of multidimensional and OLAP, and became number one in terms of OLAP monitoring, in terms of the market share, about 2002. And one of the key things from the team has been, like, how can we provide business intelligence for the masses? So every single person in the organization should be able to use the BI tools, analyze the data, and make appropriate decisions for the organization. And as part of it, primarily, we want to bridge the gap in terms of barrier of entry for people to use it. So multidimensional was still being used by a lot of people, but it's a very specialized skill. You need to learn about MDX, it's much more complex, and it definitely solved a lot of business problems, but reaching a broad set of users was still barrier to entry in terms of learning MDX. So as part of it, we were looking at how can we approach this to multiple people, and a lot of them are familiar with the relational model, and how do you bridge the gap to the relational model, and making sure everyone can start using the BI tools overall from Microsoft. So as part of it, we created the BI semantic model overall. So it provides overall flexibility in terms of creation. You can either create it using multidimensional or tabular. For the folks who are multidimensional, specialized, and with certain key business scenarios, you can still use multidimensional. For simple scenarios where you want to import the data from your relational databases and set up certain key elements of business intelligence like KPIs and certain other calculations, then you can use and leverage tabular models. Okay. And this was introduced in SQL Server 2012. And there are three key things I wanted to take away from this slide. So one is the BI semantic model. There have been multiple models, even from Microsoft, that's been created over the years. people might be who've been using the tools might be familiar with some of the models from performance point, some of the models from UDM, SMDL, from reporting. So unifying all of these models from overall Microsoft stack, we want to make sure there is one unified BI semantic model that can be spanning across the entire Microsoft BI stack. So that's why we created the BI semantic model. And then for SQL Server 2012, we made some additional enhancements. So in terms of Power Pivot, specifically this was released in SQL 2008 R2 release as an overall add-in into Excel. And we released version 2 of Power Pivot as part of SQL Server 2012. A few of the enhancements are hierarchies and KPIs. These are things which customers requested. We enhanced it. In addition to that, people wanted the Power Pivot in-memory BI technology brought onto the server for the corporate because of the speed and faster to develop. Okay, so we want to make sure we bridge the gap and make sure this is available. As part of it, we created integration with SQL Server Management Studio. How can you import Power Pivot workbooks directly into your corporate environment so that IT can own and manage it? You'll see demos of this in this session today. And then in addition to that, a lot of them want to be able to, as a BI professional, I want to be able to create tabular models. And these tabular models, I use Visual Studio as a development environment. Now, can you provide that flexibility of creating tabular models? I don't want to be using Excel specifically. So we included that as well as part of the BI professional tool set. And the last thing, Office 2013, which was released last fall. So that one right now, Office uses the tabular model, which is in-proc tabular model, completely. Excel uses it for data analysis. When you import data, you can add it to the data model, and Power Pivot and Excel use the same data model. This is the overall alignment with the vision from Microsoft in terms of using the same BI semantic model. Okay. So this transition primarily talks about I'm a person, I have some data, I want to be able to analyze it. So folks have been using Power Pivot, and they've been extremely happy. This was also rated as one of the top 10 products when it was released in the year 2010. It was rated one of the top 10 products. So I have my own data, and I'm able to analyze, create Power Pivot workbooks, and I'm able to analyze it and use the model which I'm using. So this is typically very short-lived. I have a specific business problem. My manager came and asked me to analyze something and provide some results. I'm using Power Pivot and analyzing it and being able to solve it. Now, if I want to take it to, I've created this Power Pivot workbook. I want to be able to share it with the team members, and they want to be able to leverage it. So the typical scenario would be one of the person is authoring the Power Pivot model and reports, and they are publishing it onto SharePoint. And others in the organization can actually leverage it and share it and see it, right? They can interact with the data, analyze the data, and you can also automatically set up data refreshes. So this entire team depends on this data, but it's all managed through SharePoint overall for the team. Now, the next step up is more in terms of taking it to the entire organization as a corporate environment. So how do I look at all the workbooks which are being used by various folks in the team. IT can monitor it, what are the workbooks that are getting used, and then I want to be able to bring it to the overall corporate environment, and that's where you bring in analysis services, standalone tabular model, importing the Power Pivot workbook, making it available for the entire organization. And there are several customers using this overall lifecycle, where some of them are creating Power Pivot workbooks, and that's the next stage. They publish onto SharePoint, where IT is managing this, and they're looking at, oh, what are the various workbooks that are being used? And what they do is, I have a corporate model, and these are the various workbooks which are being used. They look at, okay, these are the data sources, these are the various columns being used, and they actually look at each of the data models which are there in Excel, and they try to incorporate each of the columns into the standardized model for the entire organization. So I was actually having last week conversations with one of the customers who was actually going through the full life cycle. So the key advantages with respect to corporate BI, there are four key things. So the first one is about scalability. So if you've used Power Pivot workbooks, it's primarily it's there are a set of tables. You have to import, if you want to refresh the data, then you actually refresh the entire table. right? And as and when the data grows, you have some constraints in terms of how much you can upload into SharePoint, because SharePoint has a file size restriction in terms of uploading to SharePoint. So it's all contained within an Excel workbook. Now, if you want to go into corporate environment, you're going to get large volumes of data. And obviously, moving it to analysis services, Tabular model on the standalone helps you to create large volumes of data. But and also importing it, you create partitions. So it's mostly for manageability of, I have a lot of data coming in every month or every week. I want to be able to create partitions and just load the data which has arrived recently. I don't want to be loading the entire data, billions of rows of data. I just want to load millions of data which has just arrived recently for the last week or the last month, etc. So that's more in terms of partition. And then the second one, as part of scalability, is there is some specific mode called direct query. So how many of you are familiar with direct query? Okay, very two or three people. So think of it as like I have a very large volume of data, and loading it into Tabular model and loading it into memory is significantly difficult. Now, how do I allow pass-through queries? So I have a relational database system like SQL Server or Parallel Data Warehouse. Now, how do I allow, in terms of pass-through queries, I don't want to load entire load data into memory. One of the gentlemen was asking, like, how do I manage this, especially with new things coming up from SQL Server 14? Then you essentially will create a model, set up something called as direct query. You will see this later in the demo. And then the data will not be loaded into analysis services tabular model, but analysis services will form appropriate queries, SQL queries, and send it directly to the backend. So especially when you're using it with the PDW, Parallel Data Warehouse, it becomes very, very powerful. You can leverage a lot of the things. There are some constraints with respect to feature set, but this is satisfying a lot of the customers whom we have worked with. Okay? The second one is manageability. So obviously, support from SQL Server Management Studio, being able to programmatically create tabular models, being able to use PowerShell and SSIS packages to refresh the data. So that's second in terms of manageability. Then security. So this is one of the most common things where people want in terms of the feature set. Especially moving to corporate environment, they want to be able to set up security so that certain parts of the model are seen only by certain users. As an example, so let's assume that I have sales of the entire Europe, right? And I have some sales folks just specifically for Spain. Then I want to be able to look at, I want to give access to the sales information only for Spain users, only for that particular section of the data, right? So how do you go about setting this? This is something which is available on the Tabular model. And then the last one is integrated environment with tools, with Visual Studio, being able to do source control of the packages, models which you're creating. So here, on the left-hand side, you see this is more in terms of Power Pivot. You have information worker creating the Power Pivot workbook model, which is they are creating. And it's all as part of Excel. It's a single file. You have the ability to upload to SharePoint. Then that's more in terms of personal BI. Then moving into team and corporate BI, on the right-hand side, you have SQL Server Data Tools, where you can import the Power Pivot workbook or create new tabular models. And this is more in terms of building multiple folks in the organization using the same project, building and enhancing it, and appropriately creating scripts for efficiently managing your tabular model. Okay. We'll jump into demos. Am I too fast in terms of speaking? Do you want me to slow down? Perfectly fine. Okay. Get into demos. So first one is I have SQL Server Management Studio here. So here I've connected to four different servers. So as part of SP1, we have enhanced some icons so that you can provide, you can understand what you're connecting to. So the first one you're familiar with, it's just a relational database system, which you're connecting to, the topmost one. The second one, it's a multidimensional model, which is still analysis services, multidimensional model. You can see the cube icon next to it. The third one is I have my Power Pivot for SharePoint setup, which is also analysis services running in SharePoint mode. And that one, you can see it's team Team BI. That's where you see a set of users. They're collaborating and leveraging their work. And then the fourth one is the tabular model in terms of the last icon shows that this is an on-prem tabular model of analysis services. Okay. So analysis services runs in three different modes. One is multidimensional, one in SharePoint mode, and one in tabular mode. When I connect to it, I need to be able to distinguish what am I connecting to, right? So this is one way to see this easily. Okay. So the next one which we have added, so the next one we have added is more in terms of the, in addition to the version, what is the supported compatibility level. So we'll talk a little bit more further demos. So these are, this is, gives you information, what is the version which is there, whether it's tabular or multidimensional, what is the server mode. If you right-click on the server and select properties, you'll see this. And then you also have supported compatibility level, which we'll get into later in the demo. Okay. So aligned with so as an information worker, so I create various Power Pivot workbooks, and I publish it on to SharePoint. This is what I've walked through in terms of from personal BI to team BI. So what I have here is Power Pivot for SharePoint setup. How many of you have set up Power Pivot for SharePoint? Okay, very few people, so about like 10 people have set it up. So when you set up Power Pivot for SharePoint, you have SharePoint environment set up, then you can go ahead and install Power Pivot for SharePoint, which is still part of SQL Server 2012. Once you run it, you'll have Power Pivot for SharePoint set up. Now, as part of it, you'll get something called as Power Pivot Gallery. Okay, so your end user information workers who are creating their Excel workbooks with Power Pivot model, they can go ahead and take these workbooks and publish it onto Power Pivot for SharePoint. So you get a nice preview of each of the workbooks which are published, and you can hover over it, and you can just open this up, and you can also slice. This is how end users, one of them person is creating the model and publishing it to Power Pivot for SharePoint, and then you can interact with the model here. So this is just the online version. You don't have to have your full-fledged tool, Excel client, installed as part of it. Okay. So now all these workbooks are published onto SharePoint, Power Pivot for SharePoint. Now I, as an IT organization, I want to be able to see what are the workbooks that are being used most frequently. And I want to be able to bring this into my corporate environment, into BI semantic model tabular, so that everyone in the organization can leverage the same model. Now, how do I go about doing this? So we had an integration story specifically for IT. So if you, let me go back one back here. So if you go into in the SharePoint central admin page, you have the Power Pivot Management Dashboard. So the icon, the Power Pivot Management Dashboard. So when you click on Power Pivot Management Dashboard here, you see a few things. So here I can go ahead, as IT, I can find out what is the average response time in terms of various requests coming in from the various users, what is the average response time, and memory being used, and overall performance, characteristics, how is the performance being on the server. But the most important one, which I feel is relevant for IT, is, so these are, this is a time slice in terms of going into various workbook sizes, and you can see here, so this is a workbook which has been published, and how is it being used, so how many queries are being used? Is it being used by one user, multiple users? You can look at it in terms of workbook activity chart. How are the various Power Pivot workbooks being used in the organization? So this is automatically getting tracked as part of when you install Power Pivot for SharePoint. This is getting tracked. You can come into the IT dashboard, Power Pivot dashboard here. You can look at it and find out which are the workbooks which are being used. And this is the workbook, for example, like you have three or four workbooks which are most frequently used over a period of time. Then you can go ahead and say, okay, I want to bring this into the corporate environment, and go ahead and bring this into corporate environment. I'm going to switch over to another demo here. So let's switch back here. And I have this is my analysis services tabular model. And I have a couple of databases. And let's assume that I've so here you have this icon restore from Power Pivot. Let me just are people in the back able to see this? Right. So you have restore databases, which is typically from analysis services. We've also added restore from Power Pivot, so that people can restore the Power Pivot workbook. And let me copy the path here. I'm just giving the path to an Excel workbook. So this is the restore from Power Pivot dialog. I'm just giving, okay, this is the Excel workbook which has been most popularly used. I want to bring it into the tabular server for the entire organization to use it. I'm just giving the path to the Excel workbook. You can see the Excel exec file, and just giving the database name. Okay, now it's restored. Let's refresh here. So now you see the customer profitability model has been restored here. Now, once you look into this, and I'm going to compare this with multidimensional model. Okay. So if you look at the multidimensional model, you have various things: data sources, data source views, cubes, dimensions, mining structure, roles, assemblies. These are various folders in terms of objects in a multidimensional server. So one of the primary reasons we created Tabular to make it much more simpler and easier for people to create the model and be able to manage it as well. So if you look at the folders here in terms of the objects with respect to a database and Tabular model, you see connections, then tables and roles. This is very, very making sure that's very, very simple. You don't have to worry about a lot of the complexities underneath the covers. So you just have connections, tables, and roles. So let's go ahead and these are the tables which are part of the model. And I'm going to send some query here. So here, how many of you used MDX Query Designer here in SSMS? A few of you used here. So this is the MDX editor in SQL Server Management Studio. So the same editor can be used for writing MDX queries. And we've introduced something called as DAX queries. And this is as part of integration with Power View. Power View sends DAX queries to tabular models. And you can write both MDX and DAX in the same editor. And so if you execute the queries, let's just select and execute the queries. So this is sorry, could you? Yes, good question. So the question is, if Power Pivot has a set of relationships created, will those relationships be brought back to the tabular model? The answer is yes. So the entire model in terms of the tables, relationships, measures, KPIs, whatever you created in your tabular in the Power Pivot model, the entire model is brought back to the server. So essentially, underneath the covers, when you create your Power Pivot workbook, it's creating analysis services tabular model, which gets stored as a backup file along with Excel. Okay, and that we're just taking the backup file and restoring it here. So here, so this is the customer profitability model which we just restored. So this one just has data for 2010, and that's the MDX query, which is there. And this is the equivalent DAX query, and just going to execute. And you see the same thing for 2010, you get the same results here in terms of for the DAX query. Now, what I'm going to do is one of the first things in terms of once you import the model, in terms of manageability, we talked about manageability is one of the key features in terms of importing to the server. Now, I can go ahead and as part of the table here, you have a few options when you right-click on the table. You can process the entire table, which is essentially what you do is refresh. In the Power Pivot UI, you see it as refresh, aligned with the users in Excel being able to refresh the data. Here, from the corporate environment, from IT perspective, they're processing the table. This is essentially loading data. Okay? So you can create multiple partitions here. Okay? So what I'm going to do is right-click and select partition. And in the Power Pivot model, every single table just has a single partition. And that's one of the constraints in terms of people who attended the last session. I think from Peter was mentioning, if you want to refresh, entire table has to be refreshed. So one of the key reasons to move into tabular model is to create multiple partitions. You, in terms of manageability, that helps you to just manage it efficiently so that you can just import the most recent data for the last month or last week. Okay. So here what I'm going to do is, this is a single partition that's been created. I'm going to copy this partition, and I have another table for history. Hopefully I got this correctly. Okay. So I've created another partition here. And I'm going to just refresh this particular partition. Okay? So let me bring this dialog here. So here, what we have done so far is we've imported the model from Power Pivot, created a new partition. I'm going to process the new partition that I've added to load data, historical data. So what you saw was data for 2010. Now, this has information for 2008 and 2009, so I'm going to process and load the data for those partitions. Now, as part of it, you have multiple options here. So you have various options in terms of process default, process full, process data, process clear, and process add. These are various options. While it's processing, I'm going to go over what these options mean, how can you efficiently manage it. Go back to the slide deck so that you can verify, you can learn more about it. But as part of it, you also have the ability to script to a new window. Okay? So one, I'll start the processing, and then we'll go back to the slide and come back and see. Okay. So the type of storage which is being used when you process the data. So in terms of tabular model, which is Power Pivot, or Power Pivot for SharePoint, or the analysis services standalone tabular server. So entire thing, it's internal storage, which is being used, we call it as column-oriented storage or Vertipack. Okay? Now, I'm just going to walk through. This is probably high end of 300, a little bit 400 level slides, but I thought this will be useful for you to understand what goes on behind the scenes. So you have a table which is which has three columns, and you're trying to load the data and as part of it. So analysis services creates two types of things. One is column segment, and then one is dictionary. So one is loading the data and optimizing it in an efficient manner to storing it. And there could be multiple segments which are getting created, where one segment, right now on the server side, one segment constitutes 8 million rows of data which is being used. And once it's loaded up, these column segments and dictionaries, then there are a few other operations that gets loaded up as part of processing. Okay. In terms of better to understand how efficient to understand in terms of what Vertipack does in terms of storage, how many of you used fax? Fax, F-A-X, for sending faxes, right? Most of you, I assume, have used faxes. So one of the key techniques in terms of encoding techniques faxes uses is if you have a lot of white spaces, it just transmits a single bit to the receiving end. It doesn't have to transmit the entire page, right? It just breaks down the page into smaller pixels and see if there is a big block of white space. It reads it and just transmits a single bit so that it's easier to reconstruct. You're reducing the amount of traffic and data. So somewhat similar technique is being used, much more advanced, but somewhat similar analogy and technique is being used. If you see a lot of values of, for example, marital status, married and single, right? And if you have a billion rows of this, instead of storing each and every value, what we do is just store one value of married and one value of single, and depending on that, it's just compressing it into very, very small portions. So I'm just giving an analogy to better understand what Vertipack does. So then you have calculated columns, which are part of the tabular model. Those get processed along with hierarchies. And similarly, you have a different table, table T2, that gets processed. And you have one of the questions the gentleman asked about relationships. So the relationships get imported, and those get processed as well. Okay. And you could have a partition. So for example, you have partition on 2008, which could just have 8 million rows. And the second one could be like 10 million rows. Each of the segments which you see, the blocks of orange color data, is a segment of 8 million rows. So you can have a second partition spanning across multiple segments. Okay. And similarly, on the second table, it could be a totally different partitioning scheme where you have the first partition having a lot of rows because the 2008 data there was much more larger, while partition 2 is smaller. Okay. And this is a snapshot of the processing activity on a particular machine on a tabular server. And this is just indicating the network activity, memory, and CPU when a processing operation occurs. So we were processing a 2 billion row model on a tabular server. Now, how does the memory utilization being used? Okay. So initially, analysis services reads and encodes the data. So I talked about fax being able to encode the data in terms of smaller pixels. Similarly, it reads and encodes. It reads up to 16 million rows, two segments. Reads up to two segments. And then once it understands there are more than 16 million rows, then it splits it up. So there are additional optimizations which are being done. And once, that's why you see the memory steadily growing, because it's importing data, and it has to load all the data into memory. Because if you have billions of rows, you don't want to be able to load everything immediately. You want to be load sections of data, being able to compress it, and then move on periodically. So you see the first two segments that are getting loaded, the memory periodically increases. And then it reads the third segment. It reads the third segment here, and then it compresses the first and second segment. And then compressing the second segment, the memory immediately drops down. Once the compression is done, you can see the memory getting dropped down here. Okay. So let's walk through the various processing operations we saw. What does process data mean? So when you do the process data on a particular table, what this essentially means is the reading and encoding stage. So it reads the data directly from the relational backend or whatever data source it is. It reads and encodes the data and stores it for the particular partition. The only thing which is not being done is about the various other operations in terms of relationship processing and hierarchy processing. You cannot query the data with process data, but you need to do something called as process recalc. Okay. So these are recalculations. So if you have multiple set of partitions, once you load the partition, you want to be able to recalc. What this means is I have various structures, dependencies on other tables. When you have relationships, then all these need to be processed to give the right data. So this is where process recalc comes. Process data is a combination of process data and process recalc, so that I load the data and I entirely do the recalc chain. And then process default, it loads the data and recalcs only the things which are loaded and where it's needed, right? It does certain optimizations so that only the dependent tables which are being done, it'll be a reprocessing, the recalc chain. And process clear will remove the data entirely. It could be the partition level, the database, and then process add. Assume that I have a partition here, and I have like 10 million rows in the partition. Now new data has arrived. Okay, I want to be able to load the new data into the partition. Then partition add helps you to load the data into the same partition. Okay, let's assume that I have a partition for June of 2013, I'm processing almost every day, right? And I want to be able to have a single partition for the June of 2013, then you can do process add. And process defrag, so this is one thing which we added. So one of the things which we've observed is customers being able to create multiple partition, and once a particular partition is not needed, they delete it, okay? And when they do a set of partition deletion, now there are dictionaries that are scattered across various places, then you may not get the optimal performance. So in order to get the optimal performance, you do a process defrag so that it's any defragment segments, all these are compressed appropriately here. Okay. So this is a typical life cycle. Once a model is created, tabular model is created, typically what we observed is like incremental processing is a typical operation, right? I get data every month, every week. I want to be able to load the data. So the first step is create new partitions for the new data, and then you do a process data, and then process recalc, okay? So one of the key things as part of managing a tabular model is you want to avoid process full. So every time you had a list of partitions, you don't want to do process full, okay? The reason is primarily, so if you have like 5 partitions, right? So if you are adding 5 partitions, when you do process full, it does process data and process recalc, right? So then what it does is recalc does not have to be done every single time. It just expands the time which you do in terms of processing operation. It just, it's not needed because the last recalc which you do will be sufficient. So assume that you create 5 partitions. The data has arrived, you create 5 partitions, do process data on the 5 partitions first, and then do one process recalc at the end. So that's the optimization which we recommend. Okay. Okay. These are a little bit advanced operations in terms of processing or data loading. This is very typical and needed for like enterprise corporate BI models, which you would develop and manage. So one is parallel processing. So we don't have the support for processing multiple partitions within a table in parallel. This is highly requested features. We are looking into it. So this is essentially, I have a table. I have hundreds of partitions. Can I process all of the partitions in parallel? Currently, this is not available in SQL Server 2012. But you can process multiple tables in parallel. So let's assume that your model contains like 10 tables, right? Each of them have various partitions. You can process the tables in parallel. Only thing which you're constrained by is processing on multiple partitions in parallel, okay? And one data point I wanted to provide is if you're doing a sequential processing of various partitions in multidimensional versus tabular, tabular is significantly faster. So we've done various tests on various data sizes. Tabular is significantly faster. Just because of the parallel partition processing and multidimensional available, you might see the entire processing taking faster right now. But once we release, when we implement and release parallel partition processing in tabular, you should see the benefits. Okay? Process defrag. If you're periodically deleting partitions as part of overall managing it, make sure you do process defrag periodically to make sure you shrink any dictionaries that have been left completely because of the process delete, okay? So if you see that your users are not using certain columns, these are just taking up additional spaces, loading time, query time, and disk storage. So we recommend remove unused columns. So if your data model has like one of the table contains 20 columns, and like for example, customer table, right? So if you have the customer table with name, social security number, description, postal code, address, and let's assume that some of the columns are not being used by any of the users, like telephone number or something which is not being used, then remove the columns. So it'll improve your data load as well as query performance overall and reduce the storage as well, okay? The memory requirements. The next step is, so if you have a list of partitions, and if the partitions are growing, so let's assume that you create partition for every day, Okay, so your data arrives every day. You want to be able to load the partitions every day. And if you create partitions every day, at least on a weekly basis or a monthly basis, go ahead and merge partitions. You don't want to be having partitions with very, very small data sizes. So it's also a manageability. I would call it as like manageability is a key factor. If you have thousands of partitions, managing them is much more difficult. So if you have logical grouping units, like on a monthly basis, go ahead and do process merge. So this will all merge the data into a single partition with multiple segments. And you still get the query performance because each of the segments are being distributed to a particular core. So let's assume that your machine has like 32 cores. The scanning of the data and as part of querying, it's being done based on the segments. Okay. And error handling, so if you've used multidimensional model, you have a very, very strict error handling scenario in terms of multidimensional. You will get RI violation error. RI here refers to referential integrity. So I have a sales data coming in, but I don't have a corresponding outgoing relation to a particular product. So this particular product does not exist. It's an RI violation. So now these are very significant constraints which are in terms of multidimensional model. We want the BI developer to make sure that they are aware of it, being able to manage it appropriately. In the tabular world, especially Power Pivot and end users using it, we didn't want to impose this constraint. Okay. So as part of it, automatically any RI violation will be, all the data will go into a blank value. Okay. This is just primarily to avoid information workers or people using Excel to running into these problems. Okay. So let's go back here. Hopefully the processing is completed. So processing is completed here. And I'll come back to this XMLA query, but I'm going to run this query again. The processing is done. So now you see the... So initially you had the values for 2010. Now I've loaded a partition, and I've just done process default on the partition right now. It's loaded the data for 2008 and 2009. And similarly, and I'm going to run this query as well, the DAX query. And you see the values for 2008, 9, and 10. Okay. So we scripted out the partition processing, right? The process default. Now, how does it look like? So this is the what analysis services supports, which is called XMLA. This is a process operation. You can see process default on the top. And then what is the database ID? And you have a set of things. It is not intuitive in terms of you see tables. Now you see cube ID, measure group ID, and partition ID. So underneath the covers right now, analysis services uses as an in-between layer, the multidimensional layer, which is created originally for 2005. So that's why you see these database ID, cube ID, and measure group ID, and partition ID. We don't have a full-fledged tabular object model and an XMLA corresponding to it. Right now, you need to be a little bit familiar with what this means. But the tools try to hide it so that from a person who is managing from an IT perspective or managing the model, you don't have to worry about it. But if you're into XMLA, which is XML for analysis services, and being able to manage this, because you can take the script, create an SSIS SQL Server integration services package, and process your data. Okay, in analysis services. Then you would form the script, something like this, script it out, being able to programmatically take this, appropriately pass in database ID, partition ID, and being able to manage this. So the question is, what is the security context if you're running a package from SSIS? So essentially, whatever the application that's running the SSIS package needs to have permissions for processing the database. Okay. Now, whether the processing of the database underneath the covers going back and retrieving the data, as part of the connection string, you can specify whether it's a SQL authentication, you specifically store the username and password, or is it the service account? So that's how it's being managed. Okay? Yes. Correct. That account by in which where you're specifying SQL agent to process this, that account needs to have process permissions on analysis services. Okay? Explicit. Yeah, you'll see this in, when I get to the roles demo. Okay, so I'm going to switch back to the slides here. So what we have seen so far is we've seen Power Pivot Gallery, where people publish their Power Pivot workbooks, then an IT being able to monitor it, see what are the workbooks which are being popular, being able to import this into SQL Server Management Studio. Now what we are going to see is the same workbook. How do you import and expand or enhance it in SQL Server data tools? Okay. So this is Visual Studio 2012. And if you're not familiar, so initially, as part of SQL Server 2012, by default, you get Visual Studio 2010. That gets installed as SQL Server data tools. But Visual Studio 2012 was released a bit later. So what we made a commitment was we want to be able to have, this is again based on a lot of customer feedback. These are Visual Studio releases, and developers are using them. We want to off-ban BI projects being released, aligned with Visual Studio release. So what we did was detached this BI projects, which you would see in the demo right now. And we have released a package, downloadable package. So if you have Visual Studio 2012, you can download this, install, and you can install it. You don't specifically need SQL Server 2012 installed, but for the client tools. So an update on SQL Server 2012. So what you have here is Visual Studio 2012. I installed the latest downloadable package. This was released in February of 2013. Okay. So when you go into new, so you have a list of new projects here. So let me. So you have a list of new projects. This is the multidimensional projects which are available from 2005. And then you have three more things, which is analysis services tabular project, import from Power Pivot, and also import from server on the tabular server. Okay, so these are the three things which were added as part of SQL Server 2012. And I'm going to show you when you create a new project here. So it immediately comes back and asks you, the first one is, what is the server? Okay, and if you've worked with multidimensional models, when you create your projects, you can work in an offline mode and be able to create it. But when you go into tabular model, and power, for example, Power Pivot, and you need the application to be able to load the memory, right? So because we are loading all the data into memory so that you are providing the experience of a fast, interactive way of modeling. So as part of it, we looked at various approaches. So one of the approach would be similar to Power Pivot, being able to have an in-proc server, being able to load this into Visual Studio. But Visual Studio is a 32-bit application, so we couldn't directly do this. So you need to have a separate server. What we call it is a workspace server. It could be separate from your official deployment server, but it has to have a reasonable amount of memory for you to develop your model. Okay, think of it as like a staging or a development environment where you have a development analysis services tabular model server set up. That's what you're specifying as a workspace server. And then you have the compatibility level. So we released SQL Server 2012 RTM, and then as part of it, it was version 11.0 of overall SQL Server release. So that's why we created what we call as 1100 model. Now, Office 2013 came up. As part of it, there are a few additional enhancements we had to do to integrate very, very tightly with Excel and Office. And as part of it, you have like key KPI and hierarchies being able to show up in Power View. That enhancement was done as part of Excel integration. And aligned with that, we want to make sure we get the same behavior for the server side as well. So that's why we had to distinguish between 1100 model and 1103 model. So if you create these things, essentially what it means is there are certain features, very, very minor features from a user's perspective visible that will show up in PowerView. From a overall core development of the features, you will not see significant differences. But if you're creating a new project, we highly recommend use the latest model, 1103 model. So that when you connect from client tools like PowerView, you see the full-fledged list of features. Okay. And this is the compatibility level, the default compatibility level, which you saw in SQL Server Management Studio in the first initially properties. Okay. So I'm going to import the model. And here, when you import the model from PowerPivot, we don't specify what compatibility level, because the compatibility level is already available inside the model of the PowerPivot. If you've been creating a PowerPivot model using Office 2010, then it'll be 1100 model. If you're using 2013, it'll be 1103 model. I'm going to do a test connection and. The same model I'm importing into in the development environment, SQL Server Data Tools. So once you import this, you see the list of tables which were created, DIM, political geography, product, subscriber. So these tables, their environment would be very, very similar to what you did in PowerPivot. So the only thing is there are slight differences which we'll walk through, but the environment is very, very similar. So you will be able to do filtering operations from the dialog here. You can do the filtering operations. You can do sort operations. All of these you can do. And you see the measure grid as well. So these are features which are part of PowerPivot. The same set of features completely come through once you import the model. I think one of the gentlemen asked, do the relationships get imported? So if you go into the diagram view, you'll see that the relationships also are imported here. So you have the full flexibility of all the same results. There are a few key differences I wanted to highlight. So the first one is so this one, as when you click on the particular model, you see a set of model properties. The some of these are completely hidden. Most of these are completely hidden in the PowerPivot world. So these are specific properties once you move into a development environment for the server. So these are specific properties related to the server. So for example, workspace server, and then workspace retention. So when you finish your the project, and you close down the projects, do you want to unload this project from memory? Because you are developing various tabular projects. And behind the scenes, you need a workspace server in order to be able to load the data and interact with it. And once you're done, do you want to just unload it from memory so that you don't want to eat up the memory on the tabular server? And similarly, there are other features in terms of direct query mode, which we'll see towards the end of the demos. So this is the first one in terms of the set of properties. And a couple of other features which are important. So you already saw the partitions. So if you click on a particular table, for example, here. So you saw the partitions in SQL Server Management Studio, the same set of partitions. You can create multiple partitions, being able to create them, process them, manage the partitions here, and then you can deploy it. So this is, I just wanted to show you that the partition support is also available in the SQL Server Data Tools in terms of creating it. And one of the things we're going to see in the demo right now is roles. Okay. So here you have, this is the role manager dialog. So I've imported the data right now, and this is specifically, I'm making this particular model for the entire organization, right? I want to have specific roles specified. Only certain set of users can see certain values, okay? Now, how do I go about doing this? So here I create a new role. So now, when I create this new role, there are multiple options in terms of permissions. So I think one of the gentlemen here asked, like, what permissions in terms of processing do I need, or the application needs, right? So the application, so for example, by default, if you want users to read and query the model, you would need to give them read permissions. And then you have a read and process. Okay, so this is where you need process permissions to load the data. So the application which you're creating for processing the data, so that would fall, whatever it's running at a specific account, so that account would need to have this permission here. Okay, and then you have process, and then administrator can do all the operations. Okay, so here I'm going to specify read here. And here, I see the list of tables below, which are part of the model, and I want to be able to restrict certain parts of the table for certain users. Now, how do I go about doing this? So what we have created is a DAX filter. It's essentially an expression which you specify. So when a user is authenticated and they are logged on, that particular user gets, for each of the rows in the table, this expression has to be true. If it is not true, then they don't see it. Okay. So here I'm going to do I just need to get the right expression here. So what I put in as an expression here is a particular column called region, and there are certain values in the region. So let me see here. So here, this is the region. It has central, east, north, south. So here I've created a new role and specified that this set of users in this particular role, belonging to the role, they can only see west. Okay. Now, how do we go about testing this? Okay. So here you have analyze in Excel here, and I can specify what role I want to be able to connect to. Okay, so I'm going to select this role. It launches Excel, and I'm just going to see total cost, and I'm going to add geography. So here, for this particular role, it's restricted to West right now. So this is how you would go about doing in terms of role definition. I'm going to show you without the role how this looks like, and then we'll do a little bit advanced scenario as well. Okay. Let me close this. And if I want to analyze in Excel, and I'm not specifying any role here. Same total cost. Without specifying the role, you see all the values. Okay, so without specifying the role, you see all the values. With a specific role, you see only whatever is being specified. That value is getting evaluated for the table. Now, if you have dependent calculations that are spanning across multiple tables, all those will get restricted as well. So, for example, I have sales information, which is like greater than $1 million, can only be seen by certain users. And if there are dependencies which are based on relationship, all those will get restricted based on this expression, okay? So I'm gonna close this down. And one of the other features, this is also available in, before going to the advanced scenario of roles, I want to quickly show you one thing. So So what the question is, what is the performance of setting the role in terms of, I believe the question is, once you set up the role, how does it get a significant slowdown in terms of performance? Based on our measurements, we've not seen a significant slowdown because it gets evaluated very, very fast. And we push down all the calculations very, very low to the storage engine. And it's very fast. We've not seen any major issues. So this one it becomes a little bit more important in terms of so you might be familiar with perspectives. How many of you are familiar with perspectives? A few of you. So let's assume that you've created a model which has like 100 tables, right? And it is a model for HR, for finance, various departments. It includes everything. It's part of a corporate model. Then perspective becomes a little bit more important in terms of I, as a user from HR, I want to see only the tables which are relevant to me. Right? This feature is available in Power Pivot as well. It becomes much more important in the corporate environment when you're creating tabular models. And here you can go and specify what tables I want to be able to using. So here, let's assume that DIM, product and these two tables. I've created a perspective. I can still analyze this in Excel, and I can select the specific perspective here, my perspective. And here you see only the two tables which have been selected for the perspective. Okay? This is not a security feature. This is just for primarily for what tables. I want to minimize the list of tables the user wants to see. That's why this is available. Okay. Yes.
Is it when you do that, is it so that the rest of that data just doesn't exist at all in the model, or would you still have access to the overall total for USA in that example?
Okay. Yeah, so the question is if you have specific DAX expression filtering certain values, now, how does it translate into the total overall total values? So essentially, it will be assuming that this is in the multidimensional world, this will be similar to visual totals. So visual totals automatically will get applied. You can assume that these rows do not exist. You see the values only for the rows which you see. Okay. Okay. So now, one of the scenarios, I just wanted to make sure. Check on time. We have 13 minutes. So, so one of the scenarios which is important is I want to be able to dynamically specify security and set security. Now, how do I go about doing dynamic security? Because there are various users coming in, coming, going out. Now, how do I go about doing this? So, I have a sample here. So, I'm going to import. In the interest of time, I'm going to go through this. Import pretty quickly. So what I'm doing here is importing a specific table called security. So I've imported this table right now, and so this has two rows. It has two rows, demo user and demo test user 2. These are the various users, and demo user can see west while the test user can see north. Okay, so I'm going to show you a sample example of how do you go about specifying dynamic security. Okay, so I'm going to go into roles, specify dynamic role, and give read permissions here. I have a security expression that I've created. So let me walk you through very quickly what the security expression does. So what this does is, for every row in the geography table, what it does is does a lookup value, and username is a specific function, a DAX function, which is available, which will retrieve who's the current user logged in. Okay, so it'll look like demo AS slash user, right? And that'll be a string which is retrieved. And it's what it's doing is region user username table. Region user is a table which I imported right now. And that you have the column called username. And whether that username is matching with whatever the current user who's logged in. And aligning with that is also region name, region with the region. You saw the north and south, north values, north and west values. Are these matching here in the political geography? So this is what the expression does here. And once you have this condition matching, only then the rows, corresponding rows will retrieve, will evaluate to true. Okay? So if you don't, if these do not evaluate to true, then you will not see them. Okay? Now, in order to test this out, I need to run Excel as a specific user. So I'm going to go back and let me minimize these windows. So I have a run as script so that I can launch Excel as demo user. So launching Excel and going to data connection tab, to analysis services, and So one thing I missed as part of definition here. So let me go into model and roles. So one thing I missed was as part of this, I need to add this particular member. Okay. So here I need to add demo user. Okay. Now let me go into analysis services. And this is the tabular model which I've been creating right now. You see this. And I'm going to click to the model. And I'm going to add geography and total cost. So this is restricted to West. Okay. Now, right now, this is restricted to West. I can go ahead to the table here, the relational database table here, go into security. Let me change this to north. Okay, so you don't have to go and set up the security. I'm just changing this to north here. And I'm going to come back here to this. And I'm just processing the table right now. It has retrieved the data. And you see the data retrieved as both is north. I can, when I go back to Excel here and do data refresh, it automatically changes to not. So this way you can set up dynamic security with DAX expressions so that you don't have to go through setting up security for every single user. Okay. Let's go back to, so we saw how to create BI semantic model in SQL Server data tools. You can create as a new project or import from Power Pivot. Okay. And then one of the other things which people have been asking for how do you programmatically create the BI semantic model? This has been a common ask. I'm not going to go into demo here, just in the interest of time. We have released a full-fledged sample as part of this. So this is the sample page. It's called AMO to Tabular to AMO, Tabular AMO 2012 in CodePlex. So this is essentially programmatically how do you go about creating your tabular model. It's a full-fledged sample. We walk you through exactly how to create this. It's a little bit complex because we don't have a tabular object model stack programmatically you create this. So we've given exactly how exactly go to go through and create this with a sample so that you should be able to download this and use it. Okay? So I just want to make sure people are aware that you can programmatically also create tabular models. Okay. So one of the key things with respect to we released parallel data warehouse 2012. So this is a BI semantic model slide. You can create two different types of BI semantic model. One is multidimensional, one is tabular. This session was most focused on tabular. As part of it, we saw in terms of importing for Power Pivot workbook, how do you manage it? And you have various data sources. Okay. So one of the key things as part of parallel warehouse data 2012, it also supports Polybase, where you can create external tables going into Hadoop. And then how do you go about creating this in terms of creating a BI semantic model, which can directly query against parallel data warehouse? One is you can load the data, obviously, into memory. But if the data is really, really large in terms of Hadoop systems and various large data, then you can create something called as direct query. Okay, so this is what the demo and the next demo is going to be about. How do you go about creating and querying against a parallel data warehouse that's connected to Hadoop? Okay, and this is the demo you'll be seeing here. Let's jump into. I'm going to switch over to the next machine. Hopefully this works. This is a sample I've downloaded. I wanted to show you, but in the interest of time, I'm going to quickly go through the other one. Okay. So here I've connected to, what I've done is I've connected to, this is a parallel data warehouse. This I've connected to CorpNet. And this is a database called Nova. And let me go into the tables. I want to show you what the table looks like. So this is going out to CorpNet. Using CorpNet is going out to, we have a parallel data warehouse, a set of VM setup, simulating parallel data warehouse, as well as this is a, how many of you are familiar with parallel data warehouse? Five, six people. So this is essentially, which is part of SQL Server, which is a separate offering, which is an appliance offering with a full-fledged SQL Server with multiple nodes. And what you can do as part of the 2012 release, they are compliant with respect to SQL Server in terms of various SQL syntaxes. In addition to that, they've also added support for Polybase, where you can connect to Hadoop systems, where a set of files which are there, you can connect to Hadoop systems using something called as external tables. So that's what I wanted to show you here, which are... So here, if you see here, these are some additional properties that are getting created here for external table. So I'm not going to dive into how do you go about creating these, but this is essentially available in parallel data warehouse documentation. In terms of you set up your parallel data warehouse, you have your Hadoop system which is set up. Now you can create external tables connecting, pointing to the Hadoop systems. And parallel data warehouse smartly distributes the query onto various nodes of the Hadoop system. Efficiently retrieves the data and being able to serve the data. Okay? And what I've created here is I've created a model. There are two things, so it's very similar. I've created a new analysis services tabular project here, and I've just imported that particular table called Census External 2, which we saw. This is reaching out to Hadoop system and retrieving the data. And the two things which you want to be importantly, what is special about the model? Okay. So this is the first property here. I don't have zoom it on this machine. So the first property here is direct query mode on. So that's the first thing which you need to set up as direct query mode on, so that directly it's doing a pass-through query. And then the second one, after setting that up, you want to go into model properties here. and you set up the query mode is also direct query here. Okay? So the two things, one is as part of the model property, setting up direct query mode on, and then the overall for the database, you're setting up direct query. Okay? So there are multiple options here in terms of what the query modes are, but you're setting up just with direct query so that you can do a pass-through query directly to your backend. Okay? And I've created this model and processed it, and I'm going to just connect using data here. And one of the key things with direct query, you can only be able to create PowerView reports, not pivot tables. So this is important, but this is the primary thing which is currently supported. And when I go and click on population, right now, PowerView sends a DAX query to the analysis services tabular model. Analysis services tabular model retrieves this, understands this is a direct query mode, it translates to the right SQL, and sends it to the backend. Okay? Here, in this case, it's sending to PDW. And PDW goes and retrieves the data from the Hadoop systems, and then you're getting back the data directly into your Excel. And it's not all that slow as well, as you can see. So I wanted to show you in SQL Profiler. So this is the query begin. This is the query which is being sent by PowerView. And this is the query that is getting sent to the PDW. Okay. I'm going to switch over here. So just in summary, we learned a little bit about BI semantic model, how this was introduced, what is the reasoning behind it, to make it simple and easier for people to develop and bridge the gap of multidimensional relational, making it simpler for the users. And we saw about manageability in terms of SQL Server Management Studio, how do you import Power Pivot models, IT can analyze what are the Power Pivot models which are heavily used, bring it into IT or create new tabular projects as well. And then how do you go about creating it in SQL Server data tools? What are the key features which are important in terms of bringing it onto the server? Direct query mode, partitions, perspective is one of the important things, even though it's available in Power Pivot. And then we saw the integration with parallel data warehouse, with Polybase going into backend and directly retrieving the data. So that's the summary. I'll be happy to, we're out of time. I'll be happy to stay and answer questions. So we still have the book as well, so people can ask questions to get the book. And these are related content for this session and the regular resources. And it's important for us to learn, was this session useful? What did you find it useful? So please provide the feedback for the session as well. Okay. Yes, go ahead. Yes. Yes. So the question is, do I need to learn DAX in terms of can I still use tabular models without learning DAX? Certainly you can use tabular model. The simplistic version without creating any DAX expression, you can create a very, very simple model and use tools like Excel pivot tables or PowerView. Completely, you don't have to learn DAX. Where DAX comes and helps you is if you have a little bit more complex measures, you need to be able to learn a little bit more in terms of how do you create these DAX expressions to create the complex measures. So, for example, if you want to do year-to-date calculations, how do you go about doing it? If you want to simulate many-to-many relationship, how do you go about doing it? That is one area. The second one is more in terms of calculated columns. When you create a calculated column, you need to have DAX expressions created. A lot of these were created, if you look at DAX originally, how this was created, this was primarily for Excel power users. They were importing the data, doing lookup values in terms of Excel. It's extremely complex. They're not able to have a useful tool within Excel and also constrained on the number of rows in Excel. That's how we evolved DAX in terms of initially just as an expression, so that if you look at the style of DAX, it's all very, very similar to Excel functions in terms of Excel expressions. So it's easier for the people to translate from using Excel, getting it a little bit higher and into DAX. And then we brought this back to Tabular Model and made it as a query language as well as part of SQL Server 2012. So it's not very complex. It's significantly simpler, I believe, in my opinion, significantly simpler with respect to MDX. Learning the semantics of MDX, it's simpler. We've tried to make it simpler, but again, trying to bridge the gap to the best extent. Okay. So only in key scenarios where you want to use it, then you need to use that. Okay. Out of time, I'll be happy to stay and answer additional questions at the end. And I have the book, copy of the book. There are a few of them who asked some questions. So I'm going to give it to him. He was asking what is the permissions in terms of when an SSIS package, which was needed.
Cheers.
Okay. Thanks for the session.